This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran strongly condemns Israel's airstrikes against Syria, saying the regime is violating international law. French trade unions call for a new day of nationwide protests against a Tuesday. And Ukraine's president urges Europe to speed up supplies of modern weaponry to Kiev. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi and these are our top stories at this hour. Iran has strongly condemned Israel's attacks against the international airport in the Syrian city of Aleppo. The country's deputy ambassador to the United Nations says such attacks pose a serious threat to the regional peace and stability. Zahra Ershadi was addressing a UN Security Council session on the situation in Syria. She said Israel's attacks target Syrian civilian infrastructure and violate international humanitarian law and the UN Charter. Ershadi added that Israel's strikes have serious humanitarian consequences for the people of Aleppo following the recent devastating earthquake that hit northwestern parts of Syria. The Iranian diplomat called on the international community to end its silence and hold Israel to account for its crimes. She also urged the UN Security Council to stop its double standard approach to Israel and condemned the regime's violations of international law and the UN Charter. Israel has conducted two major airstrikes against the Aleppo International Airport in less than a month. The airport is the main port of entry for foreign aid to earthquake victims. Clashes have once again erupted in the occupied territories between the Israeli regime forces and protesters demonstrating against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's proposed reforms. The protesters blocked main roads as part of what they call a day of shutdown. Several protesters were arrested. The Knesset has just approved a law that shields Netanyahu, who faces corruption charges, for being removed from office. The law is part of the judicial overhaul bill that has triggered weeks of discontent. If approved by the Knesset, the law would grant the ruling coalition more powers in appointing judges. Critics argue the legal changes will foster corruption and bring about diplomatic isolation. Palestinians have held a funeral of the latest victim of Israel's violence in the occupied West Bank. 25-year-old Amir Imad Abu Khadija was shot multiple times in the head and the lower limbs. The killing took place during an Israeli attack in the city of Tulkarm. Abu Khadija was a commander of the Tulkarm branch of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, the armed wing of the French resistance movement. The Tulkarm Brigade has vowed to avenge the killing. So far this year, the Israeli regime has killed 90 Palestinians in the West Bank. That is the deadliest start of the year for the Palestinians in over two decades. We discussed the rising Israeli violence against Palestinians across the occupied West Bank with our guests in our news review program. Let's take a listen. To discuss that further, we're joined by Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of the Samidun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, joining us live from Vancouver. Also, we have with us Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas. Thank you very much for joining us, both of you. Let's begin with Charlotte. 90 people have been killed since the beginning of 2023. This is one of the worst years that Palestinians have begun with escalated Israeli aggression. What does this signify?
Well, it signifies several things. One is that the occupation forces are becoming increasingly desperate and bloodthirsty in their effort to suppress the Palestinian people and their resistance, which they've been unable to do so for over 75 years. We see the installation of this openly fascist government containing these figures like Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, and Netanyahu, which of course is nothing new to the Zionist project, but at the same time, this they're attempting to kill the rising Palestinian resistance through all means, through massacres, through attacks, through mass imprisonment, but they've failed to succeed in doing so. And one of the things that unfortunately this also reflects, for Palestinians is there are no limits being placed on the Zionist regime by its supporters and its funders in the United States, the European Union, and the other Western countries that are responsible for the outrageous and illegal behavior of the Zionist occupier. At the same time, the Palestinian resistance has continued to grow despite these killings, despite these massacres, and is continuing to make it clear that the Palestinian people will never be erased from nor evacuated from their land.
So, Mr. Nafi, in your opinion, less than 3 months, and we already have 90 people that have been killed by the Israeli regime forces. Also, let's not forget that just a couple of days ago, an Israeli minister stood next to a map that included Jordan in the occupied territories, clearly stating that Palestinians do not exist. What does this mean?
Well, this is an attempt by the fascist Israeli regime, by this new, the new Knesset, to really try and expand their territories. I think that the obnoxious statement of including Jerusalem within their own territories was primarily a failed symbolic representation of the Israeli regime's true intent, meaning if countries like Jordan in the past have ever felt the need of having peace accords with the Israeli regime, or even have considered having friendly ties with the Israeli regime, they need to understand that the Israeli establishment is not there to be your friend. They are and will always be your foe. And this new government is really And we all expected that a government in which Netanyahu holds hands and creates these ties with the fascist groups led by people like Ben-Gvir, it was expected that this would happen. I mean, from storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque as soon as they came to power to now this, to now having these protests in Israel where the majority, the judicial system of Israel has been incapacitated from determining whether a certain prime minister is incapable of performing their duties or not. Meaning, where is that trichotomy of power? So the atrocities of the Israeli regime, the unfairness of the Israeli regime and the Western Empire have also become quite apparent to those who live in Zionist occupied Palestine. And that's why we see all of these protests that are going on. So they may try and exert force, but they need to first focus on their own land right now, because the kind of pushback that we see from the citizens of occupied Palestine, we haven't ever seen that before. So Israel has a lot to worry about right now. We have never seen Israel as weak as it is right now in terms of its domestic politics, to be more specific.
So, Mr. Nafi, to wrap up our discussion, what responsibility is bestowed on the international community at this point?
Well, Israel doesn't abide by the International Court of Justice. We all know that they don't even consider even a recommendation by the ICC as something that they may even take as a persuasive precedent, unfortunately. So that goes on to show how arrogant the Zionist regime is. As far as the international community is concerned, we're in the month of Ramadan right now, and in the month of Ramadan, in the last week of Ramadan, Muslims all over the world and freedom-loving people all over the world on the last week of Ramadan, they come out to protest against the Israeli regime. So the citizens of the world, it is the responsibility of all citizens of the world to come out and protest against these atrocities that the Israeli regime is not just committing against Palestinians, but also against those Jews who live in Israel. So we need to speak up, we need to stand up as a one global community and protest against Israel. Imam Khomeini declared mandatory, obligatory upon all freedom-loving people, especially the Shias, to stand up against Israel, to stand up against the Zionist regime on the last month of Ramadan. And then we see places like Yemen, we see places like Syria, places like Nigeria, who within themselves have been so brutally massacred by the Western Empire, to also come out and speak up against Zionist Israel, because we genuinely think that all the atrocities of the world, all the oppression that we see in the world today, their roots are with the Zionist regime. Their roots are in Israel. That's why Palestine is such a central topic for all freedom-loving activists and people. And so I would urge all activists to start working towards organizing a protest, a rally in their local towns. And if they can't organize one, make sure they at least join one if it's already happening in their local cities.
Thank you very much, Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas, and also Charlotte Cates, international coordinator of the Samidun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network from Vancouver. Thank you very much to both of you for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. The United Nations Children's Agency says over 500,000 Yemeni children under the age of 5 are suffering life-threatening severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF issued the warning in a new report, adding that one Yemeni child dies every 10 minutes from preventable causes. The world body said a total of 11 million children are in need of humanitarian assistance in Yemen. UNICEF, however, warned that it might have to slash support for Yemeni children without a funding boost. The organization said it requires $484 million to continue assistance this year. The UN raised only $1.2 billion for all of its agencies in Yemen at a pledging conference in Switzerland last month. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed hundreds of thousands of children and Yemenis and led to what the UN has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. French trade unions have called for a new day of nationwide strikes and protests next Tuesday as anger mounts over the government's unpopular pensions reform. Trade unions organizations made the announcement in a joint statement, blaming the government for, quote, the explosive situation in the country. They also asked the workers to continue protesting against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reforms. The statement came after over 1 million people took part in a nationwide demonstration in the ninth day of the protest against Macron's plan. The massive protests were organized by unions in protest at what they called Macron's scorn and lies. According to the French Interior Ministry, 123 law enforcement members were injured during the clashes with the protesters, 80 of whom were arrested. Riot police fired tear gas and used water cannons to disperse the protesters in the northwestern city of Rennes. Train services were disrupted and some schools were closed as garbage piled up on the streets. France has witnessed regular protest strikes since Macron announced his plan in January. Public anger escalated last week when the government adopted the pension reforms bill without a parliament vote. Macron has doubled down on his plan to increase the retirement age by 2 years, saying it will enter into force by year end. The latest wave of demonstrations represents the most serious challenge to the president's authority since the Yellow Vest protests. French opposition lawmakers have strongly criticized President Macron's policies. Here's what some of them had to say.
He says that he respects the protesters, but he insults them, and he insults all French people in general, all those who, in virtue of the respect of the Constitution, are protesting, including those who are protesting peacefully or those who are respecting the Constitution and are going on a strike. We see that in reality he has in him an anger that he cannot get under control toward those who disagree with him.
He's an absolute pyromaniac. He's setting this country on fire. He pushes people towards entrenchment. He creates anger. He's the one who fuels the fire today, then tomorrow. He'll say that it's dangerous and that he's the order in the face of chaos. But he's the one creating the chaos. That's the problem. He has become an instrument of chaos. And that's the whole problem with Emmanuel Macron.
You know, the only thing that could have calmed all of this was to hold a vote on pension reform in the National Assembly. Now, daring to call it a victory after he bypassed the vote of the people's representatives, that seems a bit provocative or even inappropriate to me.
German unions have called a major transport strike for Monday as workers demand higher wages to cope with surging inflation. Unions said public transport staff, as well as those working at ports, will walk out virtually all across the country. The announcement follows a series of failed talks with employers in recent weeks. The unions are demanding a 10 to 12% rise in monthly salaries to keep up with inflation rate. A third round of salary negotiations for public sector workers will begin on Monday. Germans are struggling with surging inflation as a consequence of the Ukraine war, which has sent food and energy costs soaring. The Ukrainian president has criticized his Western allies, that is, for delaying in sending modern weapons and warplanes. Volodymyr Zelensky urged them to speed up supply of such weapons, warning that otherwise the war could continue for years.
While every hour on the battlefield counts, the delay in supplying long-range missiles to Ukraine is already significant. This does not allow us to roll back the positions of Russian terrorists, in particular from Kherson, Zaporizhia, and our other cities, which are constantly shelled by Russian long-range missiles.
In a video addressed to the EU leaders, Zelensky urged a bloc to impose tougher sanctions on Russia. Zelensky also asked EU leaders to speed up talks on granting Ukraine the bloc's membership. Ukraine has repeatedly called on its Western allies to send modern warplanes and long-range missiles to help it push back the Russian forces. The U.S. and the EU have already pumped billions of dollars of military aid into Ukraine since the start of the war in 2022. Russia says Western military assistance to Ukraine only prolongs the war and adds to the suffering of Ukrainian people. The UK Central Bank has increased its interest rates by 0.25%, and not for the first time. Increase was announced the day after an unexpected increase in the country's inflation rate from 10.1 to 10.4, one of the highest levels in decades, Said Puraza reports.
A day after a surprise jump in inflation, an expected rise in the Bank of England's interest rate from 4% to 4.25, the 11th increase in less than 2 years.
The Bank of England argues the increase in the interest rate is aimed at reducing inflation. That's amongst the highest levels since 1982. On the other hand, there are some economists who are saying it'll inevitably increase the pressure on many Britons, already being squeezed by the cost of living crisis.
That's because a higher interest rate means a higher cost of borrowing.
It's going to affect people with mortgages, and it's going to affect companies with debt, and there's a lot of companies with a lot of debt.
Today's interest hike comes against the backdrop of this pledge by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in January.
We will halve inflation this year to ease the cost of living and give people financial security.
That is yet to happen. Some economists say some of the inflation rise can be blamed on potentially one-off factors, such as vegetable shortages caused by extreme weather in Spain and North Africa, and British producers not producing for fear of massive energy bills. Others say there are other underlying reasons. The Bank of England was the first to increase interest rates, but not the only one. EU and US central banks have also raised borrowing costs, with the American Central Bank's chair, Jerome Powell, saying there was still a long way to go to tame inflation in the world's largest economy. While Britons continue to contend with the soaring cost of food and energy, would this be the last rate hike by the UK's central bank? Saeed Purizam, London.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Nowruz Special. In the name of God, Salam, and welcome to the program. Dear friends, Nowruz has a rich culture. We have already talked about Haftzin tablecloth and different items that are put on it. It is good to know that the Iranians make special foods on the occasion of Nowruz. These foods remind people of their childhood and are prepared with much care by mothers. Stay tuned, please. Sabzi polo ba mahi, which is rice mixed with vegetables and served with fish, is a popular dish of the Iranian cuisine which is prepared in various occasions, especially on the eve of Nowruz. Many ancient Iranians believed that eating rice mixed with vegetables and served with fish would bring blessing, freshness, richness, and prosperity till the end of the year. In other words, fish symbolized liveliness, and rice and vegetables symbolized generation, fertility, and blessing. Dear friends, as you know, samanu is one of the main items of Haftsin tablecloth. This pudding is made of fresh wheat sprouts that are cooked very carefully and patiently. Fresh wheat sprout is rich with vitamin E, and it is very nutritious. Samanu is the symbol of richness and blessing. To make this delicious pudding, wheat sprouts are prepared usually 10 days before starting the cooking. Family members and relatives and even neighbors gather together to stir the big pot one after the other. It takes nearly 20 hours to have a good quality samanu. But once it is prepared, you can't help eating it. Well, after a short break, we make you familiar with a custom during Nowruz in Khorasan region. One of the customs in Khorasan region is called kuze shekani. Kuze shekani means breaking of jar. A jar is filled with water and a coin is cast in it. Then the jar is given to one of the family members to throw it from the roof to break. It is believed that breaking the jar will destroy pollutions and sorrows. There is also an interesting tradition in southern Khorasan province. The family of the groom bring presents for his fiancée. These include dress, shoes, bag, rice, meat, and other things. The family of the girl, in turn, invites the family of the boy for lunch or dinner to bolster family ties. The people in southern Iran have their special customs and traditions in Nowruz. They fill the house with wild rose smoke while reciting the prayer for the turn of the year. They also visit the graveyards carrying sweets and rose water in their hands. Wild rue has been recommended for its antiseptic effects by physicians since old times. Dear listeners, the people of Shiraz have an interesting tradition. For your information, the city of Shiraz is famous for its bitter orange trees. The blossoms of this tree fill the streets and neighborhoods of Shiraz with their sweet smell in the first days of spring. If a tree is not fruitful, the family holds wedding for it. The wedding for the bitter orange tree is the story of a woman who wants to cut the tree of unkindness. Thus, the women of neighbors are invited and the woman of the house takes a saw and pretends to cut a branch of the tree which is not fruitful. One of the neighbors acts as go-between by covering a thin lace on the tree and sprinkling sweets on the tree and making happy moments. This way, they believe that the tree will blossom and bear fruit. Now we take you to Yazd province in the center of Iran. Some of the people in Yazd make fire on the roofs of houses as a symbol of destroying the cold winter. Then they pour wild rue on the charcoal as a symbol of dispelling evil events. Another tradition among these people is called koluchak. The people of Yazd put small potatoes beneath fire and eat them while singing happy poems. Dear listeners, in the end of this episode, we take you to the north of Iran. people in the north of Iran maintain a tradition called Shegin. Shegin is the local pronunciation of Shogun, meaning omen. The first person entering a house in Nowruz is called Shegin, and he or she is believed to bring good omen and blessing. This person is usually chosen from among children. Thus, Shegin brings a tray with water, coin, sprouts, and a copy of the Noble Quran. He or she steps in the room, and nobody else should enter before them. Dear listeners, many thanks for being with us.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
کشورهای اسلامی از تفرقه همشون ضرر میکنند و از اتحاد همشون سود میبرند.
All Islamic countries lose from discord and all of them profit from unity.
And I think this is an obligation, an obligatory duty for any Muslim to step forward for the sake of unity.
And we would have to look at leaders' advice.
Viewpoints.
According to the view of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei.
From IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, and I'm Ruhullah, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints, produced by Brother Mahmoud, is mainly concerned with the most important speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Muzammil and Sayyid Mohsen. Brother Muzammil, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me over here.
And Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum to you and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. The Holy Quran and the significance of this book as the book of Hidayah or guidance, as elaborated by Imam Khamenei, is what we are mainly concerned with. In our previous discussion, we talked about the Saada in this world and the other world, and we talked about the definition of success and how the Holy Quran can help us to reach prosperity and blessing both in this world and the hereafter. One of the important topics that Rahbar, that is Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has referred to is the topic of Quran and the unity that it establishes between Muslims. So the first question, Sayyid Mohsen, is this. All the Muslims, both Shia, Sunni, all the sects and denominations, believe in the Holy Quran, and they know that there is no alteration in this book. It has been a miracle and it's complete. Okay. But the question is why we must look into the Holy Quran to reach unity. Are we not united among ourselves to find unity in the Holy Quran?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's a good question, and obviously the main reason that I can think of is basically, you know, when we read Quran, obviously everyone does not know the Arabic language. And we all obviously are from different backgrounds. But there are some scholars who basically translate or interpret the Quran. When they do the interpretation, obviously they do interpretation according to their own understandings. And within the Muslim community, we have some people who have interpreted the Quran according to their own sense. Mm-hmm. And when it was basically established among a specific group, they change it to something else. Mm-hmm. So it keeps changing. Like if I say a phrase and 10 people listen it, when they narrate the same phrase, it's different when they write
That's
it,
right.
when they quote it.
Okay.
The reason we need to go back to Quran all the time and see is because the person who has interpreted this thing or who has translated this verse of Quran, we need to see whether he has done it rightly or wrongly. And whenever there is a dispute amongst the Muslims, obviously we have a verse in the Quran in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, if you have dispute amongst you, refer back to me, which is Quran, obviously, when we refer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's the book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Allah is ordering us to refer back to him and the Prophet. And obviously when we refer to the Prophet, it's ahadith and the narrations that we have from the Prophet. The difference is because of the interpretations that have been done. And obviously, in the world, we see that even in the material world, in the general like universities, we see that if there are two professors, they both have different opinions about the same context. And this is something natural within the human beings. So we find these differences. But how to resolve this dispute is the main source where they have got. Like, we need to go back and see, if this person has interpreted this thing in this way, what was the actual source? What was the actual phrase? So that's why all the time we need to go back to the Quran in order to make peace and unity amongst the Muslims. And I would like to just remind you out of the verse that we have in Surah Ali Imran, chapter Ali Imran, verse 103,
okay,
in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, it's a famous ayah, which we usually recite for the unity. وَعْتَسِمُوا بِحَبْلِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا وَلَا تَفَرَّقُوا.
That's
now, the
right.
Question is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying, like, you should not be dispersed. لَا تَفَرَّقُوا.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It means that Allah knew that after the Prophet, this Muslim ummah will be divided into different groups.
That's right.
That's why Allah is saying there, لَا تَفَرَّقُوا. And you need to hold this habl, which can be referred to the Quran, mm-hmm, and the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, because they both are same. Like the Prophet, when he says, like, I'm leaving two heavy things amongst you, like Ahlul Bayt and the Quran.
Right.
So they both are together, because we say Ahlul Bayt are Quran and Natiq.
Yeah.
They're the spoken Quran.
So coming together, the weight is, yeah, the same.
Weight is the same.
That's right.
So wa'tasimu bihablillah is the first order from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So if you have this, mm-hmm, hablillah, this, mm-hmm, rope of Allah, or okay, the Ahlul Bayt al-Quran, then you will not be divided into different groups.
And sometimes the non-Muslims contemplate on the Holy Quran and says really interesting things. I could remember this professor, the Canadian professor Gary Miller, in one of his speeches, he talked about the Navy lieutenant who read one part of the Holy Quran, the English translation, which was about these storms and the sea,
mm-hmm,
and said that, was Muhammad a sailor? He said, no, Muhammad was not a sailor. He lived in desert. You know, Hijaz at that time was a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And Muhammad maybe had no picture of what would be a storm like. So said, this is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
How the clear picture of the sea and the storms are given in the Holy Quran, and Muhammad was not a sailor, and Muhammad was even living in a desert, in Sahara, okay? So sometimes the look that these...
they have an outer look.
Very good. The outer look,
yeah,
that they have. We take Quran for granted, Brother Muzammil, isn't it? We as Muslims.
It's a revelation.
Yeah. It's a revelation. We take it for granted. Sometimes, okay, this is Quran, this is for us, we are Muslims, okay? So we do not refer to that. We have, a volume of it in our house and a niche of your house or the mosques. We do not refer to that. Okay, we have it, it is for us. Regardless of the fact that it is for the humanity in general, the Book of Guidance. It could be for the general people all across the world. And sometimes, really, I'm proud of what these non-Muslims says about the Holy Quran. As a book of
they're just looking, and even they are just looking at the surface of it, right?
Yeah, this
I mean,
is the
okay. This is just a surface of Quran. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a narration from our fourth Imam that and again I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact narration in my head. Maybe respected scholar can help me with this. It says that the verses of Quran, the ayahs of Quran are like treasure.
Mm-hmm.
This Quran is like a treasure box, and it is the right of the treasure box that it must be opened and a person should reap the benefit from it.
That's right.
And literally, it is a treasure box, right?
It depends on how we open this box.
It depends on how we open, whether or not we open this box or not, whether or not we know that this is a treasure box.
That's right.
That's another question, right? The non-Muslims, it's a. I also had this incident where one of the friends in the States, they had reverted from Christianity to Islam, and this person went to this gas station and to fill up gas, right?
Okay.
And as soon as the person realized, the worker at the gas station realized that this person is a Muslim, they called that person towards them. They're like, come here. And are you a Muslim? And they're like, yeah, I'm Muslim. And this lady who was, who could only speak Spanish, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I look at my phone. I've had this app, this Quran app, since last 4 years, and I've been reading Quran, and I just did not know. I've been reading Quran in Spanish because her English wasn't good.
That's right.
She was like, I was just praying that somebody is sent over here that I can ask them questions. And this lady was completely convinced because of just reading Quran, how much it made sense.
And
to
how
her.
Much we as Muslims are really ready on the spot to answer the questions of the non-Muslims about the Quran. I'm myself working in the media. I'm in religious media for 15 years. I've been a Muslim 38 years of my life. I do not dare say that, okay? A non-Muslim stops by and asks me about my book. I confess it. I cannot answer your questions regarding the Holy Quran. So how this gonna make us united, brother? I mean,
The leader has mentioned, right? The leader has mentioned this point that one of the reasons that we see, one of the main reasons that why there are so many differences amongst Muslims, mm-hmm. how we are basically falling apart as a Muslim ummah, it's because of our distance from Quran.
Mm-hmm.
He has mentioned this in his speeches,
mm-hmm.
that one of the main reasons that why we are in this state is because of our distance from Quran.
That's right.
Quran was supposed to bring us together. One of the miracles of Quran is like there has never been any fabrication that people have been able to make in Quran.
That's right.
It's the same book that is in my house, and it's going to be the same book that's going to be there in the house of a Salafi, right, for example, a Sunni, right?
Okay.
The more we are going to attach ourselves, so now it goes both ways. One can raise a question that, Sunnis or the other sects have more Hafiz al-Quran than we do,
mm-hmm.
they focus more on Quran than we do. Hence, why do we have so much difference?
That's right.
Right? For the most part, whenever we are talking about unity, it's always coming from Shia school of thought.
That's right.
And without being biased, right?
That's right.
And we take a lot of pride in it.
Mm-hmm.
We do take a lot of pride that we are the flag bearers of unity.
Okay.
Something which was mentioned specifically by Prophet during his last sermon, along with the Hadith of Wilaya, along with Hadith of Thaqalain.
Also, infallible imams, that's right.
Unity was, we are proud that we mm-hmm. are the flag bearers, we are the pioneers mm-hmm. of this initiative, that, you know, we want to have one ummah. A lot of people think that's a political strategy. It's not. It's not a political strategy. And again, this
the concept of ummah is very different from having a society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the commonalities that exist between the Muslims are really many. I mean,
right? You always go for the commonality. A leader has mentioned this thing. Mm-hmm. And leader has mentioned this thing several times as well. That, you know, when we are talking about, a lot of people think that this is a political strategy that mm-hmm. we are trying to bring Sunnis on our sides. No, this is what our core belief is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we believe.
Okay.
Per our aqaid, per our beliefs, that, you know, we need to form a Muslim ummah.
That's right. Thank you very much. It was very kind of you, Sayyid Mohsen, very beautifully. And Brother Muzammil, thank you very much for your practical examples, man.
Thank you very much.
It was very kind of you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Do not forget us in your du'as and supplications during this holy month of Ramadan, also your recitation of the Holy Quran with contemplation, tafakkur, and ta'aqul, of course. And please visit our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. Also send us your questions and comments at englishradio@irib.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Limelight. Experts are saying President Biden's age will become a troublesome issue in the 2024 presidential race. Some White House aides are quietly keeping an eye on President Biden, who often stumbles when he walks and struggles with words during public speeches. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. A former White House doctor criticized President Joe Biden's latest physical report as alarming, saying it makes no mention of his declining mental health. U.S. Representative Ronnie Jackson, who served the Donald Trump and Barack Obama administration, said Biden's latest health report was nothing but a cover-up after the president's physical report concluded that he was a healthy and vigorous 80-year-old who is fit for office. Ronnie Jackson said, "The majority of Americans can see that Biden's mental health is in total decline, yet there is no transparency from the White House on what's going on, if anything, to address this issue and his inability to do his job." The latest round of warnings over the president's health comes after other White House physicians warned that Biden's results were likely sugar-coated to hide any health concerns that he might have. Joe Biden, America's oldest ever commander-in-chief, has faced serious criticism about his mental capacity following a series of high-profile gaffes, including misremembering names and dates and even failing to properly shake hands with other world leaders. His latest gaffe included stumbling in his State of the Union speech recently when he called U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer the minority leader when he is in the majority. The president's new exam included a routine physical and neurological check, which found nothing consistent with any cerebral or central neurological disorder. The physical report revealed that Biden had a lesion removed from his chest and still suffers from a stiff gait, but remained overwhelmingly positive as White House Dr. Kevin O'Connor gave the president a clean bill of health. Former White House Dr. Ronnie Jackson said that the report only further confirms that this administration is still adamant about concealing the truth. He said nowhere in the report was there mention of Biden's deteriorating mental health. Ronnie Jackson added, "This is alarming considering I have already sent three letters to the White House demanding that Joe Biden receive a cognitive test and that the results be made public, all of which have been ignored." He said, "Everyone can see something is wrong. The cover-up needs to end." Ronnie Jackson's concern comes as both Republicans and Democrats express anxiety and worry about the president's age, who would be 82 at the time of his second inauguration if he were to win a re-election bid. Questions have emerged both during Donald Trump and Joe Biden's presidency over the two presidents' mental fitness for office, concerns that were only heightened further considering they're both senior citizens. Following a routine medical exam in November of 2021, Biden's doctor declared him fit for duty in a press release on the evaluation, which included a colonoscopy and extremely detailed neurological exam. It was the first public medical report of Joe Biden's presidency, and Dr. O'Connor addressed a couple of items that had become topics of public discourse, including his increased coughing and whether his stiff gait was indicative of neurological issues. There were no findings that which would be consistent with any cerebral or other central neurological disorder, the doctor noted at the time. Democrats remain secretly concerned but are reluctant to raise questions over Biden's fitness for office. Minnesota Democratic Representative Dean Phillips told the political website, "Nobody wants to be the one to do something that would undermine the chances of a Democratic victory in 2024. The Fox News Channel has also covered this story and tells us more. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who has recently announced the run for the Republican nomination, has called for mandatory mental competency tests for politicians older than 75. During a speech launching her 2024 presidential campaign in Charleston, South Carolina, on Wednesday, 15th of February, the 51-year-old Nikki Haley targeted both Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who are 80 and 76 years old, respectively. Nikki Haley, who served as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations under Trump's presidency, said, "In the America I see, the permanent politician will finally retire. We'll have term limits for Congress and mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over the age of 75. Haley's proposal comes as voters on both sides of the aisle have expressed frustration with aged American politicians. In November, Joe Biden, the oldest man to run the country, referred to Cambodia as Colombia at an international summit in Phnom Penh led by Southeast Asian leaders, furthering concerns that the aged politician was suffering from a cognitive disorder. Joe Biden's repeated verbal stumbles and tendency to meander off script during live appearances have been seized on by Republicans as proof that he's too old for the White House. Independent observers have warned that it is very dangerous that a man with serious disturbances in cognition has his hand on the nuclear button. They have called for a mental health review of Joe Biden under the 25th Amendment, the amendment of the U.S. Constitution that deals with situations where the president or vice president are unable to fulfill their duties. On Thursday, 16th of February, Nikki Haley said she sees no reason to believe that Donald Trump would not perform well on the mental competency test. Nikki Haley said in an interview with Fox News Channel, "I think he did great the last time he did it. I have no reason to think he wouldn't do well this time, but I do think we need it." In her speech on Wednesday, 15th of February, Nikki Haley stressed that it's time for a new generation of leadership. She told the crowd gathered in Charleston, South Carolina, "We're ready, ready to move past the stale ideas and faded names of the past, and we are more than ready for a new generation to lead us into the future." She said, "America is not past our prime. It's just that our politicians are past theirs." Also in the past, Nikki Haley has suggested that aged politicians in U.S. government should undergo a cognitive test. In an appearance later on Wednesday on Fox News Channel, Nikki Haley called for generational changes when asked what differentiates her from Donald Trump. She was asked where she and Trump hold differences on issues. She responded, "Look at everything that's wrong in this country and tell me we don't need new leadership. But the difference is we need new generational leadership. We have to leave the status quo, we have to leave this chaos behind, and we've got to start talking about the future." Meanwhile, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has said the Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley's demand for mental competency tests for politicians over the age of 75 is absurd and ageist. Bernie Sanders, an 81-year-old, told CBS's Face the Nation program, "We are fighting racism, we're fighting sexism, we're fighting extremism. I think we should also be fighting ageism." Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has mounted two strong challenges for the Democratic presidential nomination, the first in 2016 when he was 74 years old.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.